Rushdoony Radio presents Systematic Theology in Two Volumes by Russus John Rushdoony, narrated by Nathan F. Conkey, produced with permission by the Chalcedon Foundation. 3. Creation and Providence. Under the influence of paganism earlier, and since the time of Hegel at least, because of the dogma of evolution, many people see the universe as a cold, mechanical, and empty force. Vitalism has seen a tendency and a moving force in the universe, but it is non-personal and essentially mindless. It manifests direction and purpose in retrospect as a result of chance and blind urges, not as a self-conscious and decreed will. In such a worldview, the universe has produced man, together with 1,000,000,001 other things, but is unconscious of man and indifferent to him. Tomorrow, a wandering star, asteroid, comet, or some other cosmic body may mindlessly destroy the Earth and man. Those who would hold that such an accident is unlikely or impossible ground their opinion not in some absolute purpose and plan, but in a theory of electromagnetics and other impersonal and mindless forces. Humanistic man thus faces a blind and cold universe which is not truly, quote, alive, end quote, and is most certainly destined for cosmic death and collapse. In such a cosmos, man is clearly alone. A universal conflict of interests prevailed, and because no absolute and universal mind and purpose binds all things together, all things are in tension, if not in struggle or at war. William Butler Yeats, in his poem, quote, The Second Coming, end quote, summarized the modern mood tellingly, quote, things fall apart, the center cannot hold, mere anarchy is loosed upon the world, end quote. In a world in which, quote, things fall apart, end quote, by nature, man too falls apart. In the empty and meaningless world of modern thought, the doctrine of providence has become remote and has receded even from the mind of the ostensible believers. To be, quote, scientific, end quote, means to view reality as a cold business of wits and measures, which is best known by scientific instruments rather than scripture. Science is contrasted to religion, as though science represents an intelligent and realistic view of things, whereas religion offers merely the blindness of faith. Of course, all thinking rests on pre-theoretical presuppositions, so that faith is the foundation of science as much as of, quote, religion, end quote. Modern scientific theory is the outworking of a humanistic religion, not of observation or testing. It is a manifestation of faith, not reason, so that the conflict between, quote, science, end quote, and Christianity is a religious war, not a battle between science and superstition. Churchmen, however, as well as men generally, have been heavily influenced by the Hegelian-Darwinian perspective. As a result, churchmen may profess to believe the Bible from cover to cover, but in practice, they move as though the world belonged to Darwin rather than to the triune God. Even where men are deep in religious experiences, they are commonly remote to the providence of God and to his government and law. Not surprisingly, many theologies see the government of God as withdrawn from the world, as though creation could exist or continue for a second apart from God's sovereign decree and government. Because God and his providence are remote to modern churchmen, they see immediacy and relevancy in preaching in experimentalism, not theology. This means more emphasis on being born again, a product, rather than on the objective fact and cause, God's work of atonement and justification, on his sovereign act of electing grace. To doctrinal a sermon is held to be remote because God is seen as remote. If a doctrinal sermon is preached, it is abstract, because God is seen as abstracted from this world. The Reformation saw a very strong and heavy emphasis on objective doctrine. At the same time, the Reformers were strongly and intensely involved in the social and political scene, and in the cure of souls. All this was seen as intimately and radically related. In the 17th century, we can see the rise of introspection, the emphasis on the psychology of conversion as against the theology thereof, and the emphasis on the subjective as against the objective, infiltrate the church. The older objective approach came to be regarded in time as dead orthodoxy and, quote, scholasticism, end quote. While some elements of scholasticism are here and there discernible, usually this accusation means that the objective facts of God's nature and revelation are given priority over subjective perspectives and experiences. Certainly, the common charge that the Westminster Standards are, quote, scholastic, end quote, is evidence not of any truth with regard to those documents, but to the strident subjectivism and or existentialism of the critics. The doctrine of creation requires us, logically, to have a God-centered and objective worldview. In a lonely universe with man as the sole thinker, man can become subjective because he is the only intelligent point of reference. All else is at best a blind order, or perhaps a blind accidental order, and he alone can tell that tale, understand the universal meaninglessness and the cosmic surd. Meaning, then, is obviously subjective. In such a worldview, meaning requires subjectivity, because meaning cannot exist elsewhere by definition. Relevance in every area of life means subjectivity. If, as modern philosophy holds, the world is man's will and idea, then to abandon subjectivity is to abandon relevance, meaning, and truth. If, however, the doctrine of creation is exactly what Genesis 1 declares it to be, then subjectivism is a delusion. Any primary emphasis on my thinking, my logic, and my experience is then an emphasis on a delusion. But the reality of things is God's absolute and objective creation. Not only then is a subjective emphasis a delusion, but it is the delusion of sin. If an evolutionary and subjective worldview prevails, that is, if the subjectivism of modern philosophy and modern life and religion prevails, then it logically follows that the government of all things is not upon God's shoulders but man's. We then have humanism and the belief in the sovereignty and ultimacy of man. In religion, this means that man can say no to God and can reject God's efforts to redeem man. Man, in his sovereign free will, can bar the door to God's plans and purposes. In such a perspective, no consistent doctrine of providence is possible. For the non-church humanists, some vague, quote, purpose, end quote, or direction in evolution can be assumed by faith, that is, that it is upwards, evolution, and not devolution. That future course, however, is at best problematic, and it may mean the elimination of man as another kind of dinosaur. A strictly biblical doctrine of creation not only logically requires an objective rather than subjective worldview, a theology rather than an anthropology, but it also requires a high doctrine of providence. Isaiah tells us of the Messiah, quote,
Well done for listening all the way to the end. This is Nathan, the narrator, speaking to you from Puebla, Mexico, from the Faith for All of Life school in which I teach English as a volunteer. I teach from kinder through high school. Now, I rely on donations in order to keep teaching and recording, so if you want to support a Faith for All of Life school in Latin America and want to keep listening to Rush Dooney while you vacuum, drive or cook, commute or whatever you're doing right now, donate at ctn.org/Nathan Conkey. That's NathanConkey, all lowercase. Or if you prefer PayPal, paypal.me/NNathan, capital C Conkey. You can also email me at nfconkey, that's nfconkey@gmail.com. Thanks, and I look forward to speaking to you very soon.